The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Linda Castillo. She joins us on the telephone out in the Texas Hill Country. Welcome to the program, Linda.
Thank you so much for having me, Vic. I'm pleased to be here.
Linda, you have a new novel out in your highly popular series, and it's called The Hidden One. Tell us about this series. How did you get the idea for it?
Well, you know, this is actually the 14th book in the Kate Burkholder Amish Mystery Series. It's hard for me to believe that it's the 14th book, but it is, you know, it's a long-running series. The first book in the series, Sworn to Silence, was released by Minotaur Books, St. Martin's Press, in 2009. You know, sort of the background on the story on this series is that the protagonist, Kate Burkholder, is formerly Amish. And when I came up with the idea for this series, I really wanted to create a character who could sort of immerse readers into the world of the Amish. And, you know, one of the things that I set out to do was I wanted to depict the Amish in an honest way. I wanted to make it realistic. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, cozy mysteries out there. There are some romances out there that are set in the world of the Amish. And, you know, I didn't want to, you know, glamorize or anything like that. I wanted to depict them in a way that was very honest.
And why were you so interested in the Amish?
Well, I originally began my career in the romance genre. I don't know if you know that.
I heard that.
But yeah, I started out writing for Harlequin in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And after a long journey to publication, it took me about 11 years to sell my first book. But I was in a very unusual situation. I found myself writing for two publishing houses. Once I did sell the first book, writing for two publishing houses at the same time. And of course, you know, the procedure is that when an author finishes a manuscript, they turn it into the editor, and the editor at that point, they offer suggestions, editing, and they you know, do a critique on the book. And, of course, writing for two publishing houses, I had two editors. And when I had several books under my belt at that point, and I realized that I was getting very similar feedback from both of these editors. You know, I was writing romance at the time, and they were basically telling me, Linda, you need to concentrate on the relationship between the hero and the heroine. Mm-hmm. And they were basically telling me that I needed to stop killing people. And, you know, it was sort of at that point that I realized I was writing the wrong genre, that I had, my strength as a writer had always run toward the darker elements. You know, I love the mystery aspect, and I never shy away from, you know, crime. And I really wanted to try my hand at crime fiction.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about the Amish?
Well, at that point, I decided that I wanted to write a breakout book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, honestly, what writer doesn't want to write a breakout book? And so I'm a plotter. You know, you probably know there are two kinds of writers. There's a panster who basically writes by the seat of their pants. They must know what happens next.
A panster?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right by the seat of...
Right? Okay.
I'm a plotter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I wrote a synopsis. I was able to come up with what I believe was a pretty high concept plot. But I had been around publishing long enough to know that if this book was to be a breakout book, I really needed to find something that would put it over the top. And probably back in, 2006 or so, I took a happenstance trip to Ohio with my brother-in-law and sister. He grew up in Fredericktown, which is sort of in the northeastern part of the state. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in a 200-year-old farmhouse. And, we had a terrific visit with family. We're standing in the front yard saying our goodbyes. It's like 10 below zero, and there's a foot of snow on the ground. And I see an Amish buggy come down the road. I hear the clip-clop of hooves, and I look over, and I see an Amish man, flat-brimmed hat. He's wearing the Amish garb, and his family is sort of, tucked into the back of the buggy. And it was that moment when I thought of this thriller, this mystery that I had been working on for several months now, that I knew if I set that story for many different reasons in the world of the Amish, that was the thing that would really put it over the top.
And that's where you came up with the fictional town of Painter's Mill in Ohio?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm originally from a very small town in Ohio. I went to school in Dark County, Arcanum, Ohio, in the western part of the state, sort of between Cincinnati and Dayton.
That's in our listening area. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Hello from Texas.
Okay.
And so, Painter's Mill is sort of, I've taken aspects of, many small Ohio towns, from where I'm from, plus, of course, I've been lucky enough to visit Amish country many times. And so I think Painter's Mill is a really good representation of small town Ohio.
All right, so we have our protagonist, Chief of Police Kate Burkhalter. How did you imagine her? Who is she?
Kate Burkhalter, when I began envisioning my protagonist, I knew that I wanted a female character. I knew that I wanted her to be in law enforcement, and I knew that I wanted her to be formerly Amish. And another thing that I love about really any literary character is I like imperfection. Mm. I think, you get perfect characters and they're just a little bit boring. And so particularly in the early books of the series, Kate Burkhalter had, she had some problems. I mean, she was drinking too much. She was, personally involved in this first major case. After she became chief of police. And Kate Burkhalter as a person, I would have to say she is sort of several women, many, brave, interesting women that I've known in my lifetime. And I've sort of taken bits and pieces, good and bad, from some of the women that I've known.
Mm. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to 91.3 WYSO, connecting our community through news, music, and storytelling on the air and online. And today, my guest on the program is Linda Castillo. She joins us on the telephone in Texas, and her new Kate Burkhalter novel just came out. It's called The Hidden One. Set this up for us. What's happening in this story?
Okay, this is actually one of my favorite stories in the series. This book opens with, Kate Burkhalter. She's chief of police in small town in Ohio Amish country. And three Amish elders show up at the police station wanting to speak with Kate. And, of course, she does. And these three men, a bishop, a deacon, and a minister tell her a story about something that happened in the small town in Pennsylvania where they're from, Belleville, Pennsylvania, which is in the Kishikokias Valley in central Pennsylvania. And 18 years before the story opens, an Amish bishop went missing. And a couple of months before the story opens. An Amish farmer is out cutting alfalfa in his field, and he uncovers bones. And those bones, through DNA analysis, are matched with this the remains of this bishop that went missing. And in Pennsylvania, there is an Amish man who is being held for murder. There was some other evidence found at the scene. And these three elders do not believe that that Amish man is guilty. And they know about Kay. They know she's formerly Amish. They know about her law enforcement background. And they come to her for help, to help this man, this Amish man who's been wrongly accused, allegedly. And, you know, Kate quickly realizes she has a very personal connection to the man who's in jail. He's originally from Ohio, and she was involved with him when she was a teenager.
And we get the occasional flashback to those days when she was so young and so interested in this handsome young man. My guest is Linda Castillo. I just have a quick question. You mentioned that the bishop's remains were found and they were able to identify him through DNA. Would it be typical for an Amish person to have their DNA on file? It seems kind of like something they wouldn't want to do.
You know, they wouldn't, but they were able to, for example, his match to his children. It wouldn't be an exact match, but they would be able to tell that he is a relative. He has living adult children, this deceased, this, you know, Amish bishop who is deceased. Mm-hmm. So they would be able to basically test his adult children,
sure,
and then extract DNA from, you know, probably like the molars, the pulp of the molars. There would likely still be some usable DNA in the teeth.
Gotcha. When you were talking about this group of gentlemen who came to Painter's Mill all the way from Pennsylvania to recruit Kate to help them investigate this disappearance, for a second I thought you were getting ready to tell a joke. You know, a bishop, a deacon, and a minister walk into a bar, but...
I'm going to have to think on that. That could be a good one.
I'm teasing you. Anyway, we have Kate Burkholder, and now she's out of her jurisdiction, and you have fun with this road trip for her, because she really has no legal authority to be where she is, and the local constabulary isn't really particularly thrilled to have her on the scene.
No, they're not. You know, it's a small town, you know, Belleville, that whole area. I mean, just, you know, it's sort of like rural Ohio. It's a very small town area. And, you know, they sort of don't want to have what they believe to be true. They don't want to have that questioned. And, you know, Kate's an outsider. She has no authority. She's sort of unproven. You know, they don't know her. Of course, they're able to check her credentials and things like that. And, you know, so Kate is totally approaching this case as somebody who, you know, they believe she also has a personal connection to this case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a little bit of a no-no. And so they don't appreciate her, you know, asking questions and so forth. But the police are not the only ones. I mean, there is, you know, somebody else in town who would just prefer that some of the secrets that are buried stay that way.
Jonas Bowman, Kate's first love, is being held in jail when she arrives on the scene. And she's feeling a sense of trepidation about going to see him. Kate is in a relationship. She's living with a man that she really loves. Maybe they'll get married. He's married. He has children. He's happily married, or he has been until he got arrested and charged with murder. And we find out that Linda Castillo, the romance writer, is very much alive and well, because when she and Jonas get together, there's some sparks still lingering there in the ashes of their long-ago relationship.
You know, you're right. She is still alive and well, although, you know, she doesn't appear very often. But, you know, books really, when it boils down to it, they're, you know, relationships are such an important part of any book. And, you know, Kate and Jonas had a relationship a long, long time ago. And but they remember. They remember those, you know, formative years. And, you know, they share a lot. I think Jonas Bowman was probably one of the few Amish who understood Kate. Kate didn't fit in with the Amish. She couldn't follow the rules. She didn't believe the rules were fair. And I think he understood that. And there's a scene in the book where he tells her that, you know, she may stay true to herself, but it's going to be a hard road to travel through her life. And I think he was right. I think even at then he was an astute enough person to know that she probably would not remain honest.
We have the homicide mystery in this story, who killed the bishop? But we have this second underlying mystery that really is much bigger, because the mystery is, who was this bishop? Who was this guy really? And what does an Amish bishop do? Who was this guy?
Yeah, you know, you're right. There are sort of two parallel mysteries, and that's really one of the aspects that I love about this book. You know, an Amish bishop is basically the leader of the church district. He is chosen by lot, and he, you know, he does weddings and communions and baptisms, you know, and of course the Amish, being Anabaptists, believe in adult baptism. And he has a major role, a decision-making role. And an Amish bishop, when he is chosen by lot, he considers that position to be a burden, but one that he must bear, and he must serve his church district. And so, you know, he's basically, even though they would never, you know, they're not supposed to abuse their power in any way, it's a very powerful position. And that's who Ananias Stolzfus was.
And they have the power to ban people in their community. If someone does something that makes them be forced outside the community, they're the ones that make that decision. In fact, the reason why her first love left the community in Ohio is because he was banned, right?
Well, I think that was, you know, what happened between Kate and Jonas when they were teenagers in Ohio. She was 15 years old at the time.
Uh-huh.
And even though they had known each other for many years since they were kids, and Jonas was 19. And if you think about the age of consent in Ohio, you know, the bishop wanted them gone, but, you know, that's, you also get into other legal issues. Jonas could have gotten into a lot of trouble, because they did have, right before he left, they did have a very close relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't clear on whether he was actually banned from Ohio and that's why he went to Pennsylvania, but he certainly left in a hurry.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And his parents, of course, you know, he was only 19, left with the family, and that was basically the last time Kate saw him.
One of the great aspects of these stories is that Kate is fluent in their language because she grew up with it. And so she's able to communicate with these people in a very closed society. She's able to break the ice and speak to them in their own language. And you have a lot of this language in the book. And I'm wondering, are you conversant with the language? How are you able to do this?
One of my librarian friends from Amish country, one of the small libraries that I am able to travel to every year, she has given me a lot of books on the language, different kinds of books, because they're, you know, it's actually the German language. It's a dialect of German.
Mm.
And interestingly, I do use a lot in the books, And I think it lends a certain level of credibility. And I think when it comes to Kate, she's not above using that, using her own, you know, culture to be able to gain somebody's trust or you know, talk to them or be accepted in some small way. So that's, I think it really adds an interesting element to the book.
While Jonas is languishing in jail, his family is busy trying to keep his business running. And if there's one thing that I think of, it's almost a stereotype for the Amish, is they are so industrious and they're so good at working with wood and building things. And his family is helping to run his cabinet business. He's got these little kids making this beautiful furniture. It's crazy.
They are very hardworking. You know, the Amish, of course, you know, they're not perfect, but they're good neighbors. They're family-oriented. They're hardworking, generally speaking. And these children, his three children, are really able to step in and, you know, they've got a contract to make. They're selling furniture. And they try to keep things up and running while their dad is in jail. And, of course, the mother is trying to protect them from all of the, you know, what he's accused of and all of that, which is a brutal murder.
In case you're just tuning in, my guest is Linda Castillo. We're talking about her latest Kate Burkholder novel in her series, and it's called The Hidden One. And the other day, I noticed a gentleman here in Yellow Springs was having a new addition built on his restaurant. And normally, when you're observing something like this going on, you watch and they work, and then several months later, they finish. And so I was astonished when I saw these guys do this massive new addition in just a matter of days, and they were gone. And I saw them, and I said, wow, I said, I don't think I've ever seen anybody make an addition that fast. He goes, they're Amish.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to know. I don't know if there are many Amish in the Yellow Springs area.
Oh, you see them now and then. In fact, they come in as tourists.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'll have to look into that. That's interesting.
Maybe they're coming from Holmes County. I don't know. That's what you think of it. When you think of Amish in Ohio, you think of Holmes County.
Right. Exactly.
And Painter's Mill, is that kind of in that Holmes County area? Do you actually say?
You know, I give sort of general locations. Some of the locations that I use throughout the series are real locations and they exist. Some of the roads, Painter's Mill, I always envision as being maybe a half an hour, 45 minutes south of Worcester and Millersburg.
Okay.
A little bit closer to Millersburg, of course, but that's sort of the area, not quite to Coshocton County, but still in Holmes County, but south of Millersburg.
Okay. As she begins digging deeper, she's talking to the bishop's children. She's doing some very deep digging to investigate this murder and to try to get her former boyfriend off the hook for the accusation of having committed it. He insists he didn't do it, but the police, they're certain that they've got the evidence on this guy, and he had a grudge. He apparently had a dispute with this bishop right before the man disappeared. They're ready to close the case. And as she digs deeper, she apparently is getting warm. She's getting close to answering the question. And there's some people that apparently want to stop her. And this is where we get some good thrills, and we find out just how tough Kate Burkholder is.
Yeah. Kate very much has, you know, she's very tenacious when it comes to solving a case that she's working on, especially when she feels certain that someone is innocent and being wrongly accused.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this sort of brings in this secondary mystery, which I absolutely loved I don't know how to say too much about it. I don't want to give anything away.
Mm-hmm.
But these two mysteries are so intertwined. And, you know, Kate is looking at the big mystery, and she sort of discovers this other mystery that really is, really in so many ways, is even bigger and darker. It's
true.
A very dark, dark mystery. And it was very interesting for me as a writer to watch Kate sort of work her way through this one and connect the dots that really in my mind were not very easy to connect.
Well, she's really like a bloodhound. And when she tracks down the woman that worked in the bakery, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things when you're a writer, you don't ever want a piece of information to come out of left field.
Uh-huh.
You have to plant the clues. The clues have to be there, and they had better be very subtle because you don't want them, you know, you don't want to give it away. You want it, the reader loves to be able to discover and uncover that mystery with your character. I think that's part of the fun of reading a mystery novel.
You said earlier there's pantsers and there's, was it plodder or plotter?
I like to think of it as plotter.
Oh, okay. Because I know you're not a plotter. I was doing the math. You said the first book came out in 2009. You've written 13 of these. Here that's 13 years later. You're cranking out a book a year. You are very productive. How many books total is it for you, counting all the romances? Do you have a number?
You know, I think that it is about 35 books.
Wow.
Which, I mean, that it blows my mind just to say that. It doesn't seem like it. But I also do sort of a cross between, it's kind of like a hybrid between a short story and a novella of a Kate Burkholder series. Usually before the release of each novel, I write sort of a mystery novella and a little bit lighter, a little bit more of fun read, not quite so, you know, dark in tone every year. And so, yeah, I think I must be prolific. It doesn't feel like that sometimes, but, yeah, 35 books, seems unreal.
And those shorter pieces have been collected in A Simple Murder in the last few years?
Yes, they did. I was receiving a lot of, you know, email and messaging from people who were like, hey, you know, I don't use a Kindle or any kind of e-reader. Are these going to be released in, you know, on paper? And lo and behold, my publisher, after several of these novellas, they do well. They're interesting, small mysteries, and they do pretty well. And so they did a collection, and that was actually released in February of last year.
Okay.
I think there were five or six novellas in that book.
Linda, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you about your work.
Oh, Vic, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
My guest has been Linda Castillo. I love her new story, The Hidden One, and I know we've got a lot of readers out there who are into this series. It just came out on Minotaur Books. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis.